Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, welcome to Tuesday Night Jaw, nearly the end of the year, Hall of Fame and primer for your year-end awards edition with myself, Jim Smallman, here on the Distraction Pieces Network, and my guests, no lengthy introduction, because it's in the front room in Manchester, no you are, Chris Brooker and Matt Richards, hello.
All right. I'm shit.
No, there's a reason, we've got a lot to get through, right? I'm not.
Are you, have you been restructured? Are you getting paid by the hour now?
Yes, that's what's happening. I'm just determined to have a podcast that we record that we actually put out.
I did notice that you clocked in and out when you arrived.
I did.
And, clock.
And I've got a tachymeter. That's what the lorry drivers have. I can't do this for six. If I do this for 6 hours, I have to take a break halfway through.
I'm not ready to do this in a lay-by on the M6.
A tachymeter. There you go.
I mean, we didn't want a pun. We haven't done puns for a bit, but this is, we can't do them on this because this is too much where we need people to actually send us stuff. So I can't give everybody everything. Anyway, super quick plugs. ProgressWrestling.com, demand-progress.com, jimsmallman.com/book. They're my plugs. What's Future Shock's website address?
Not purpose.
What's Future Shock's website address?
FutureShockWrestling.co.uk. Our next show is 27th of December. We have the Legacy Tournament semi-finals and finals. David Starr versus John McGregor. Kevin Lloyd versus Wolfgang. And a no disqualification tag team championship match, which is going to be mental. We've been to B&Q. We've done the shopping. It's going to be a laugh. And also, another little pluglet. Tony Knox gave his sister a kidney. Which is
not like he didn't just acquire one.
No,
he didn't make a pie and forget the steak.
Yeah.
Like,
it was from his own body.
Yeah, and there were medical personnel involved. It wasn't like a Cronenberg body horror.
No, it wasn't. He didn't wake up in a bath of ice with a pain in his side. He did a genuinely selfless thing. It was the day after the last Progress show. In Sheffield, I think.
Which is why he was absent from doing photography for yourselves, why he was absent for doing photography this weekend, why he won't be doing photography for us in December. Because apparently, someone filled me in, apparently donating a kidney is more dangerous than receiving one. It is better to receive than give in this instance.
Well, there's a wrestler who retired because he donated a kidney to his brother.
Wasn't that Sonny Siaki? I liked Siaki.
He was good.
Yeah. Flying Elvises, bam, money.
They should have been the Flying Elve, actually. It's a correct plural. However,
that was one of them. Jorge.
This is what happens. You don't let us pun. It has to come out somewhere else. So Tony Knox gave a kidney up for his sister. So he can't work now until at least February. And I think getting over illness is a bit like saving for something. It always costs you more than you expect. So he can't wait till February. And I've done a GoFundMe to help pay his bills because he's a self-employed sort, and we've all been self-employed. If you don't work, you don't pay. You don't get paid. So, if we tweet the link,
yeah, we'll do that.
But we're trying to raise a bit of cash to get him through the festive season. So all he has to do worry about is getting better and regrowing that kidney, because that is how it works, isn't it?
Let's, for the purpose of this, say yes to you, Chris.
Yes.
I've had food colouring.
Matt, what do you want to plug really quick before we crack on?
Nothing.
Cool, good work.
just fuck you all.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I'm not. I'm doing Future Shock. I'm doing your show. I'm going to Dallas in January.
Hey, yeah.
That's weird. Like, genuinely weird.
And a lovely pub there.
On a tour I'm going to call, Matty does Dallas. It doesn't work as well as Debbie, but, you know. I might change my name by Depop just for that one week.
Okay, good. What are you doing in Dallas? Joining the Cowboys? What are you doing?
I am, yeah.
You're getting shoulder pads? I've been in the 1980s.
Yeah, I'm taking over from Tony Romo. He's a player that plays that American thing. And he plays for the Cowboys as well, or did.
Sure, Tony Romo just has a steakhouse.
Yeah, probably. I'm doing a Lego convention over there. Because that's my life now.
Lego.
Well, it's something to build on, isn't it?
Good night, everybody.
I wish I was dead.
What? Can you get me some free Lego?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh shit! I did not expect that to be the answer.
Oh right, yeah, that's fine. It's a really good gig. I love it. Like, genuinely,
I love Lego.
I'm not. Oh, why do you think I love doing this gig? My job is basically to play with Lego all day and then occasionally interview people that they're called master builders, because of course everyone needs a marketing thing. Yeah. And then they tell me about how they've made this incredible thing. And last time we did it, there was like a group of Dutch guys who were the most chill guys in the world.
Dutch
ever.
People? Chill? Can't think why.
And we had a great time. And one of them was called Bert. And he was lovely.
So anything more chilled than Dutch people building things out of Lego?
This is good. I think this is the first time I've ever actually spoken about what I do away from wrestling. Everyone's now like, why are you still in wrestling? Like, you get to play with Lego.
It's like when people find out I've got a Canadian passport, their first question is, why do you still live here?
That's a question we've been asking for a
long time. Yeah. I mean, even before you knew I count, why are you still here? Because you've got to get your bits from somewhere, Matthew.
Yeah. Cheers, Tony Bassett.
So, that's some stuff. Now to today. So, about this time last year, we did the first ever inaugural...
We did, and we all forgot that we did it.
Yeah, I had to go back and listen to the episode to remember who we put in the Hall of Fame to start with, because we put 20 people in, which was a mad amount of people. Some of them were decided by us. Some of them were decided by you listeners. What we're going to do today is each of us have picked three more people to go in the Hall of Fame. They're going in because we've said they can, because it's our podcast. And then what we want is we want some more from you. So I think I want another five from you guys. However, because it's the end of the year, in January we'll do our sort of awards show for the year, which we did in January this year. So what I want you to do is I want you to email me some stuff. And I'm doing this at the start of the podcast so you remember it and you do it. You go about doing it while you listen to this podcast. Okay, so what I want from you is your suggestion for one person who can go in the Tuesday Night Jaw Hall of Fame. Here are the criteria for that. They can't already be in the Tuesday Night Jaw Hall of Fame. They're equally... cannot be in the WWE Hall of Fame at this point. And it's probably best to avoid people like The Rock and The Undertaker, who we all know are going to go in the WWE Hall of Fame.
They also can't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No, they can't in Cleveland, Ohio. So
they'll be in the Morecambe Hall of Fame.
You beat me to it, yeah. Or actually...
Hashtag Tony Knox.
If that's true, one of Jim's picks tonight actually can't be in our Hall of Fame. So it can't be a rule. No. There you go.
Spoilers.
Yeah, Tony Knox.
So
Hall of Famer.
So I want one Hall of Famer from you, just one, and then I would also like your response to the following categories for the end of year show. Okay, thank you for adjusting your glasses, Matt, as I said that, because I don't wear glasses, couldn't do it.
I should loosen my belt.
So we would like your wrestler of the year, male and female wrestlers of the year, both WWE and non-WWE. So a male WWE wrestler of the year, a male non-WWE wrestler of the year, same for female. We would also like your match of the year, both WWE and non-WWE, and your show of the year, both WWE and non-WWE. Okay, I'll just recap that again. So, wrestler of the year, male and female, and I need a male wrestler for WWE, a male wrestler for non-WWE, female wrestler for WWE, female wrestler for non-WWE. And again, I only need one name here, don't give me loads, because it makes calculating this all really, really difficult. And then your match of the year, both for WWE and non-WWE, and your show of the year, same again, WWE and non-WWE. That's it. Dead easy. okay? And you email these. You don't tweet them to me because you won't have enough room in a tweet. You email these to me, progresspolls@gmail.com. I'll tweet this information as well. progresspolls@gmail.com. And you've got until the beginning of January to do it, so there's no immediate rush. But listen to this now and then decide to send me your nominations.
Could I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Good. I don't know why I did it like that. I'm just in presenter mode now, aren't I? Do you know what would be really cool is if in January, for the induction of the Hall of Fame, we did a live Tuesday Night Jaw where we all wore suits, because we know how much everyone loves you wearing a suit. And we did a live Tuesday Night Jaw where we inducted people into our Hall of Fame.
Do we have to invite them?
Well,
I mean, we can invite them. I
mean, we can invite them.
I can't see them coming.
No, but I just want to do another live Tuesday Night Jaw where I'm actually in the country. And available, and I also want a new reason to wear a suit. So,
all right, we can find a way of doing it. Like Periscope,
yeah,
or Snapchat,
do something, yeah.
When you say live, do you mean like find like
a venue? Yeah.
Oh, what? Yeah, we could do that maybe.
Okay. I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah, I'm throwing it out there because everyone's gonna now tweet you and go,
yeah, do this because you're not busy enough.
Yeah.
You only sleep 2 hours a night.
I think it's worth it because if only to see how many people complain that we don't do it in their town.
That's the best bit.
let's really throw them off and do it on like the Isle of Man or something.
How about we do it at my folks in Taunton?
There's two people who tweet every time we announce a progress show, be it in London or Manchester or Sheffield or Bournemouth or Birmingham or America, wherever. There's two people who will constantly tweet us. And it's nice that they like us and they want to tweet us. I'm not knocking that. But they'll always go, one of the guys will always go, why don't you do a show in Reading? That place that's notoriously really far away from London.
Don't get me started.
And then someone else will always go, why don't you do a show in Essex? That place that, again, is also really notoriously far away from London. And there's a reason. Because London has 10 million people in it and is half an hour away from where you live on a train.
So in the defence of Reading, which I never thought was the same thing that will ever come out of my mouth, because I despise that place, it was voted the worst train line/network was Reading to London. Last year.
There's no way that can be true if anyone's ever done Brighton to London.
Yes, but I mean in terms of like delays, cancellations, unreliability, that was apparently voted the worst. Also, I'm sure Reading was in the top three of the most depressed towns in the UK as well. Because guess what was number one?
Harper Hay?
No, Blackpool. There you go.
Harper Hay's always done well in those.
And someone's going to be like, now go to tweet me and go, actually, I think you're fine.
That is the voice. But yeah, so, and I notice this whenever friends do stand-up tours and people will be like, why aren't you coming to this village? Because I'm going somewhere else.
Mate, we could do the Purple Turtle in Reading, in the beer garden. It'll be sick. Like, that's a little reference for the old Reddingites.
Like so we might do a live one. Depends on all of our diaries as well in January.
I'm available.
What we're going to do now is we're going to, because this will probably be the last podcast of this year.
We'll ever do.
Ever. We've all been bought fortune cookies by Christopher Brooker. We're going to open our fortune cookies now and read our fortunes in order to determine. Good.
Is this our fortunes in wrestling for the next year?
I think it's just our fortunes in general.
Okay.
Mine says win the IC belt.
Oh my God.
It does. Oh, well, in fairness, you're due a turn with it, aren't you?
So, oh my God, it's in English and German.
How'd you get these fortune cookies?
Oh my God, it's in other languages that I don't understand and potentially could be Dutch. One's French.
That's German.
Is that Dutch?
That's Dutch, yeah.
Yeah, and that's Dutch
and French. Yeah.
Oh, that's how... Hey, Taylor, that's just
very good. So, this is for your ring announcer,
so this is this is mine. You will always be surrounded by true friends, brackets, except when you're recording Tuesday Night Jaw, when you'll be surrounded by people who are occasionally your friends and one person who...
Do you know what mine says,
you.
Jim?
What?
You will always be surrounded by true friends.
Come on! The hat trick!
The word surrounded. I think
I'm going to take a picture of this just to prove that this is a thing that happened. Actually, I actually need to get a bit closer. There is Jim's tattoo for proof.
Yeah.
What's yours say?
Mine says, may contain traces of nuts.
What's it really say?
Okay. Have you ever thought of someone and realised you were smiling the whole time? It's not really my fortune, is it? It sounds like I'm
yes,
a bit of a stalker.
But we put Milano Collection 80 in the Hall of Fame last year, so...
Correct.
Honestly, when Jim messaged us the list, that's the thing that popped me the most because I was like, I genuinely forgot I did that.
We didn't need to think too hard.
And that we let you do it.
I know, yeah. I don't know how I got away with it.
So,
anyway, we need to safely get the bits of fortune cookie away from Matthew before he implodes.
Sorry, right, mate.
This is the best podcast of just like moments of people just quietly munching.
So, let's just quickly remind you who's for when you're nominating your own person to go in the Tuesday Night Jaw Hall of Fame. Let's remind you of who is already in the Tuesday Night Jaw Hall of Fame, as I managed to find a list of them earlier on. Now, when we did this last year, again, the criteria were that they can't be in the WWE Hall of Fame already, and they have to be either retired or over 40. Which is a thing I didn't say, I think, at the top of the show. So they have to be either retired or over 40 and not already in the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, as far as I'm concerned, because one of the people who went in last year are now in the WWE Hall of Fame. They weren't at the beginning of last year, but they are now. We're not going to take them out of ours. That seems silly. If someone's retired and we put them in and then they start wrestling again, then we might take them out.
I don't have to be the one to tell them that.
No, I mean, they're going
to
be good.
It's your podcast. You have to do it.
So, these are the people, the 20 people who are already, and some of them are teams and they count as one inductee, the 20 people who are already in the Tuesday Night Jaw Hall of Fame. They are the Dudley Boys, the British Bulldog, Owen Hart, China, Demolition, Christian, CM Punk, Paul Heyman, Viscera.
You're welcome.
Hated that at the time.
No, yeah. You were all right. I loathed it.
Jushin Liger, Milano Collection 80.
You're welcome.
Sarah Del Rey, the Steiner Brothers, Molly Holly, The Great Muta, Johnny Saint, Brian Pillman, Katsuyori Shibata, Manami Toyota, and William Regal. That was the 20. The three of us, we're going to put three in each, and they're all definitely going in. There's no question about that. But then you'll have 29 people in there so far, and then it's up to you guys to nominate some more, as well as all your award category nominations as well and stuff like that. So, I'll go first because you've spoiled one of them. So, only if you know about the Morecambe Hall of Fame.
Who doesn't?
And who doesn't? Mm-hmm. So, my first nomination, because, he's kind of retired. I know he's in Japan at the minute, doing some stuff and finishing up his commitments. But had his last match in the UK at Wembley, and is definitely over 40. Not that far over 40. I think he's only got 43, 44. And that's Doug Williams, the ambassador of British wrestling. A man who, when I was watching independent wrestling in the early noughties, I went, oh, look, a British man.
Which was a bloody rarity.
It was a rarity. And someone who, having got to know him because he's wrestled for Progress so much over the last year and been the Atlas champion and was a part of the biggest show we've ever done, I got to know him as a person and realised not only was he a great wrestler, he was a tremendous human being. And someone who has been responsible for like great moments throughout his career, but even towards the end of his career was doing mad stuff. So anyone who's been to a Progress show, you won't necessarily be aware of this, but we have a gorilla position behind it. Camden, it's roughly behind where Matt and Glenn sit.
Yeah, it's behind the curtain. No, not roughly, it's directly.
Because you can
behind.
Hear us, right?
Yeah.
You can hear it. And so often, most of the talent will come out and watch people in a match. It's just what they do. And what's brilliant about Doug Williams is Doug Williams had a match with TK Cooper.
I remember. Yeah.
And my favourite part of this match is Trent Seven's commentary on this. So they go up, and they're up on the top rope, and it looks like TK's going to do a Spanish fly on Doug Williams from the top rope. And Trent Seven goes, they're setting up for it, but they're not going to do it. And they carry on setting up for it a bit long, and Trent starts going, I think, no, Dad, they're not, I mean, they're teasing it, but they're not going to do it. Then TK does a Spanish fly on Doug Williams, and everyone just loses their mind. You know that video you use when you've massively destroyed someone on Twitter?
Yeah.
That's what happened. It's literally just people falling over themselves, just losing their mind.
It's basically the scene in Airplane where they tell everyone not to panic,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it was amazing. Everyone turned into Kermit the Frog just when you see his arms just waving. Like, and he was still doing stuff like that, right up, knowing that he was going to pack it in, knowing that he had a real job and stuff like that to go to. Like he was still doing stuff like that, and still loved it, still passed on his advice to everybody, as well as having, you know, tremendous matches throughout his entire career. And I think it felt quite nice. He was very grateful to us for the little things that we did with him in the last few months of his career, and also like was when we started talking to him about if he wanted, he started making noises about wanting to pack it in, and we said, do you want to do Wembley and maybe like have that be one of the things you do towards the end of your career? And he was like, he was so happy about it. And we were like, but you're the legend here. Like, yeah, yeah. You get to pick and choose this stuff. You're the really cool. We're just promoters who just want to give you something cool to do. So, yeah, I think this current generation of fantastic British wrestlers we've got, all of them have a lot to thank guys like, not just Doug Williams, but Jody Fleisch and people like that as well. So, you know, everyone has Doug to thank for that. So
there's a period of British wrestling that I feel doesn't get spoken about a lot. And that period was the Doug Williams period, that when it was, and it was bad and it was rough. And don't get me wrong, Doug did a lot of stuff in, like, obviously he's well known for his stuff in the early days of Ring of Honor, in Pro Wrestling Noah, but Doug was there when business was down and wrestling really wasn't the thing to get involved in.
You really, really, really had to love it.
Yeah.
You really had to be obsessed with it. Yeah. I remember, I don't know if you guys remember seeing the adverts for Hammerlock Wrestling School in Power Slam, and I was, early 20s, and I looked, I think I'm pretty much the same age as Doug. Mm. And I looked at that and I went, oh, I'd love to have a go at that. But I live in Nottingham, or Derby. I lived in Derby at the time, and it's in Maidstone. I don't even really know where that is. So I didn't. But the people that went and did it because they loved it. Yeah. There wasn't any money in it. No one was getting rich. They were barely getting paid at all.
Yeah.
And it was hard, and it was thankless in a lot of ways, but they did it because they loved it. And if they hadn't, phrase we say a lot is we wouldn't be having this conversation.
On one of my first like outside bookings when I was about 16 or 17, me and CJ Banks had a tag match with a tag team. I don't think they exist anymore. Doug Williams was on the show, and I remember us both being like, oh my God, it's Doug Williams. And we were like, oh, this is the coolest thing in the world ever. We're on a show with Doug Williams. And like, I had the same feeling at Wembley, or every time we did a progress show. I was like, even though, again, it's a different sort of thing now that I'm a lot older. But I did have them little moments where you kind of go, oh, bloody hell, I just commentated on a Doug Williams match. Possibly, well, definitely for the last time in a progress ring at Wembley. I was like, no one else can say they've done that other than, you know, Callum and Glenn that did it with me. And it's like, crazy.
When we first came to do a progress show, it's very rare I've been starstruck. Like, and he was one of the very few people that I've been starstruck by.
Yeah.
And he was so nice about it as well. Yeah. And I was like, I'm really starstruck. And he's like, no, don't be.
I got really giddy when he came up to me and said, hello, Chris, once.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, he knows my name. Oh, my God. And when I got to, because I got to book him versus Joey Hayes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just before he came down to Wembley. And just when he came back and said, yeah, I'm available, I got really excited. It's like, oh, I've got to book Doug Williams in a match. Yeah. This is brilliant. And the match was great.
It was, yeah.
Who wants to go next with their first of their three?
I'll let Chris go.
Oh, well, I said, not it. I was thinking about someone and smiling all the time.
Who's your first of your three to go in?
First of my three to go in is going to be Shane Helms.
Oh, nice. Having a bit of renaissance at the minute, isn't he?
Yeah.
I can't say that word without making it sound silly. Renaissance.
Renaissance.
I don't know why I do it. No. I don't even know what voice that is.
I don't know why you do a lot of things.
Nah, me neither, to be honest. You just stop everything. Right.
Yeah, so Shane Helms. And he just popped in my head because he's the renaissance, as you were saying, is this going to be our cool whip?
It's not going to be our cool whip. I'm going to stop.
He struck me as someone who's, you know, too many times people look at a wrestler's career and they go, something boils my piss when I look on, things pop up on YouTube and there's clickbait articles like top 10 wrestlers with ears or, you know, all that kind of garbage.
Yeah.
And there's ones that go, top 10 wrestlers who failed in WWE, top 10 wrestlers who failed in TNA. Well, first of all, you got there. You got paid. You maybe didn't get to be. You maybe didn't get what you wanted out of it. You maybe didn't get what the fans wanted out of it. You maybe weren't WWE champion. It doesn't mean you failed, right? And too many people go, right, if you weren't at the very top of the business, then you were not a big
deal. Well, the amount of people as well who go, oh, this person's booked wrong. Well, you might think that, but so much of wrestling fandom, and it's always why this podcast has always tried to be positive, is because so much of wrestling fandom is watching something and going, well, I would have done that. And it's like, well, yeah, fine. Like, I mean, that's how I used to think, and I started a wrestling promotion. Well, like, as soon as the only way of doing it.
You know, one of the guys I had bubbling under, as it were, one of the guys who nearly made the cut was Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah.
Because listening to his podcast and listening to him, I know now that I know nothing. Mm. I used to write horrible articles for an online thing for wrestling, and I'd hate to read them now. Because I thought I knew everything.
Oh, I used to be smarky as anything.
Oh yeah, the more you know, that you know nothing.
Yeah.
And even just having to book like one Future Shock show a month, and handle all the loose ends of that, and herd those cats. The amount of respect I have for, I was talking to Ryan Katz over in NXT to actually have a TV show, to have a TV show where all of this, everything you can build for weeks, can just fall apart. Right? There's layers and layers and layers that as fans you never quite understand.
Mm.
But the point I was making is to have longevity, to have a career, to make a living doing something you love is a success. Full stop, period, whichever side of the Atlantic your punctuation originates from. Mm. But Shane Helms, to me, is someone who has succeeded across the board. He reminds me of R-Truth as well, and the fact that you give him something, he'll make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He was in.
Have you seen R-Truth do loads of that mixed match challenge?
Oh, I love him.
So and he's great. That's so entertaining.
I would have him on our show in a heartbeat. He's amazing. He's such an entertaining presence, right? So, Shane Helms, when you think about what he was given, imagine if Twitter had existed when Three Count debuted in WCW.
Well, I will have a bad word said about Three Count.
Yeah,
but I will fight people.
Exactly. But it was perfect. You know?
It was.
And then he went off and he did the Vertebreaker gimmick. He was Cruiserweight. He came to WWF from WCW in the Invasion, and so many people drowned.
Yeah.
The ones that looked like they had all the potential in the world either didn't fit in, rubbed people up the wrong way, or had their flaws exposed. Mm. And it's all the way from people like Chuck Palumbo, Sean O'Hare, who were like the future of the business, all the way up to DDP, who I love to bits, but he never quite clicked. Right. But Shane Helms walked in, they said, oh, we can't call you Shane, you've got one. And then the Hurricane.
Mm.
And he made it work.
Yeah.
And he's someone that now, if you were to see him, he would appeal to every wrestling fan because kids love the Hurricane.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love that? I love the fact that he went to chokeslam both Triple H and that Steve
so
Austin
fun.
In the Rumble.
That's so funny because that was the immediate thought that came into my brain. Yeah.
And the minute he actually chokeslammed, when he chokeslammed The Rock, I mean, that's amazing. His stuff with The Rock is the fact he's legitimately hard as nails as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was. That's where Sugar Shane Helms came from because that's a fighting term because he was the guy, if you had a big guy, you thought he was a bit tasty. Give him to Shane and he'll stretch him a bit and put him in their place.
He's recently had a good match with Marty, hasn't he? Marty's cool.
Oh yeah. Well that's it as well. So he's now at the point where, you know, he belt bad hand, he had his accident, he had really serious ankle injury. But he's now at the point where, like I said, everyone loves him. He's a great character. He's got but he also, like the Smarky fans kind of love him because he can go out and have a match.
Mm.
And he's clever. And it's also looking at his impact behind the scenes. So when he was with Impact, he wasn't just on screen. He was helping backstage. He was producing. He was, you know, mentoring some of the younger guys. And to me, his name just popped in my head. And I thought, you know, it's maybe a bit left field. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought it was right.
Mate, it's not left field. Milano Collection 80 is in our Hall of Fame.
That's not even in the field. That's somewhere else. But yeah,
good
so,
choice.
Shane Helms.
Good choice. The Helms is in. Who are you putting in?
Well,
Matthew Taylor, Francesca Richards.
Well, because I'm such a fucking outstanding presenter, I've got a brilliant segue into my choice. Because while we're talking about vertebreakers...
Do you want to nip out for a brew or something, Jim?
When we're talking about vertebreakers, I've got someone who did the vertebreaker... Arguably the first. She might have been the inventor of the vertebraker, but she called it the coup de main valentine instead. And that is Megumi Kudo from FMW.
So we've talked about the often erroneously called Kudo driver before,
yep.
which is a vertebraker, mm-hmm. which is, and this is it's a long-standing trope on Tuesday Night Joy, is that basically whatever your favourite head drop indie moves are, they were invented by a Japanese woman.
And probably an FMW lady.
Or an All Japan lady, yeah, or yeah. whatever. But also, because we talked about this before, you had a different choice to go in, but then we looked at ages. And
I was furious to find out that Miko Satomura has just turned 39. Because Miko Satomura, as someone who's had the absolute bloody honour to introduce her this year, is she is one of the best professional wrestlers in the world today. The Mae Young proved that. Mm. She had an incredible match with Pete Dunne. She's wrestled like such an amazing like variety of people in this year alone, and to think that she debuted in WCW when she was 17 puts into context just about how incredible her career is. So, spoiler, guess who's going in next year? But
all three of us will probably nominate her next year. She is wonderful. And a wonderful human as well.
But like, I really wanted to find... Number one, I wanted to have a female wrestler, because we have set the standard with people like Molly Holly and Sarah Del Rey. But I also, like, everyone I've picked is not just about them being a wrestler. It's about the impact they had on wrestling beyond it. And I think the thing with Kudo is that she was the epitome of what the FMW women were, which were legitimately feared by all the other Japanese female Joshi wrestlers, because they were ferocious and they all had sick names like Combat and Shark as their first name. But there was the thing as well is that Kudo's retirement match against Shark Tsuchiya, I think is how you pronounce it. I'm sorry, my Japanese isn't great. Which is a...
your English is shit.
I know, yeah. A barbed wire...
leave him alone, he's doing very well in his second language.
Yeah, Yakida. An exploding barbed wire death match, which was actually Kudo's retirement match, is one of the best death matches, hands down, because it's just pure... It's what a death match should be. It's pure emotion and drama and elevating levels of excitement. It's not about, let's do loads of mad high spots. It is sometimes, but it's all about, and that's what FMW did so beautifully, and especially Onita being the godfather of that, was they did just heightened drama. And the thing with Kudo is, like, I discovered her because of that match and all the crazy death matches she had. But what I then found out later on, she was in a tag team. She also came from the All Japan Women's Dojo and was like a Joshi wrestler up until really sort of the beginning of the 90s when she went over to FMW. But even then in FMW, she had this run as like, she was a heel for ages. And then they went, but she's genuinely beautiful and absolutely nails. Why is she not our megastar? So like from a visual point of view, she would literally turn up in, I think the only Western comparison I could think of is she'd turn up looking like Miss Elizabeth, take off this sick jacket and then murder suckers. And it's like, how is that not money? Like regardless of gender, that is a megastar. So I don't feel too guilty about putting her in at all, because like it was that moment where I was just like, I need someone, and it popped into my head, and she's in. But yeah, and I legitimately was like, do I put Anita in? But I was like, nah, because he's still kind of wrestling, he's still kind of whatever, but she's properly retired as well now.
I think with Anita is, he is over 40, you could put him in.
Yeah. But I thought like she's such a, I think she's such an interesting, like Sarah Del Rey, that if you know, you know, but if you don't know, go down that rabbit hole, because it's well worth visiting. But
there's a lot of that as well. As the wonderful thing about wrestling now is the availability.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about this watching TLC last night, that we are very much spoilt having so many high quality matches. Where you know, when we were kids, when two of us were kids at least, it was hard to actually watch it. You would see maybe three or four matches of the caliber we're seeing week in, week out, annually. And now folk are getting a chance in their sort of their latter years, when someone goes, do you know what, this person inspired me, this person drove me, and then they get a moment to shine.
I think I think I had FMW tapes, but they were them.
I do.
Do you remember them when they did the American versions of
them? Oh, I never had those. I just had tape traded ones.
Oh, no, so I ended up, like, I had a couple of them, and it was the, I can't remember the guy's name, but you know who I mean, the sassy presenter guy. Because it was through ECW, wasn't it?
Yeah, because they had a relationship anyway, because that's why Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki were working.
And Onita as well, and Kenimura, didn't he?
Yeah. All kinds of mad shit. Good first round. Yeah. Good first round picks, guys.
Woo!
There's no rounds, it's just we've got enough fans. I'll do my second one now. My second nomination, if you believe Wikipedia, is only 38. However, if you believe ProFight.db, he was born in 1975, which makes him over 40, and he's retired enough. I pick Super Dragon to go in, partly for being one of the six people who founded one of my favourite wrestling companies of all time. The entire reason that progress exists is from watching the PWG DVD. That never happens. No progress. I'm not doing this podcast. So there's that reason.
Seeing what you've done to a Super Dragon. You see?
So if that mean for Super Dragon, I could have gotten loads done tonight.
Yeah, you could. Also responsible for some absolutely great, ridiculously hard-hitting matches in PWG and in other promotions in America like CZW, IWA Mid-South as well a little bit, I think. Responsible for some particularly nuts sort of guerrilla warfare type matches in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, which I absolutely adore. Still, he's very much the John Briley of PWG. because he edits all the videos and stuff. He does everything. Like Excalibur does the commentary and the graphic design.
Do
and
me
stuff.
A favour. What's the person's name that does the clip for the show again? Sorry,
John.
Can we just make sure that is the quote that is used on Instagram? Super Dragon is the John Briley of PWG. What's that noise in the distance? Is it a no rope exploding barbed wire match? No, it's Twitter.
No, but I mean it from the point of view of the jobs that he does within the company. I don't mean John has never wrestled and certainly has never donned a mask in a curb stomp.
How do you know? He would be wearing a mask, wouldn't he?
Also, Super Dragon responsible for loads of fantastically cool finishing moves like the Psycho Driver and the Barry White Driver. Was part of one of my Edinburgh shows once. So the very famous Botchamania clip of a guy chanting Super Dragon not shutting up, I used at the end of an Edinburgh show. He's always been a big part of my life and someone that I'm not going to lie, if there's ever a way I could book him to do something in progress, I absolutely would.
Oh my good
would.
Lord, yeah.
But I don't think he wants to. So
correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure he's wrestled El Ligero. I'm sure.
He has.
Didn't
he? Because PWG came over at one point.
PWG did
tour.
Do some shows in Europe. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, weirdly, I have wrestled El Ligero. So you're not wrong.
So one out of the three of us has wrestled El Ligero.
Also,
that's like in common with humanity. I think that's a ratio that goes across every man of a certain age in this country.
As a point you made about like the Psycho Driver and stuff, as someone who tried to be a wrestler badly during that period where PWG was a thing. So I want to say, fuck you, Super Dragon, for making all the bigger lads than me think that they could do all of your moves on me. And the reason why I get out of bed every morning and go, oh, Christ. But you were awesome, so it's fine, don't worry.
If you could post properly, you would have been all right. So,
I mean, the posting wasn't a problem.
I'm joking.
Especially when
just
you're,
easy.
Especially when you're 9.5 stone. It's the landing bit that was the problem.
It's not the fall that hurts you.
Yeah. he's my second pick, Super Dragon, so he's going in.
Good choice.
To be honest, if I could have put four people in, I'd put Excalibur in as well.
What Super Dragon match would you tell everyone to go and watch? Because you got to remember that, like, I know it sounds hideous to say this, but there will be people that listen to this podcast that don't know who Super Dragon is because they're young.
I'm going to look it up because I need to get the exact show date because then you can get the DVD because obviously with it being PWG, hard to do. So, Chris, go into your second pick while I'm doing this. Who's your second pick?
My second pick is Conan. El Barbaro.
Is that gimmicks?
He tweets me. He tweets me once every couple of weeks to go, hey, have you heard my podcast?
He does that to me as well. I don't necessarily think he looks after his own Twitter.
I don't either.
But we've all had a message of him, hey, you listen to my podcast. And I'm sorry, Conan. A lot of respect for you, but I don't even listen to this one and I'm on it. So
I mean, that's worryingly accurate.
Out of luck. Out of luck. Conan is, again, you sort of mentioned this, it's not just about wrestling, it's about your impact, it's about your legacy. And his legacy as a crossover star between Mexico and North America. Changed the business and played a huge part in the style that we see now. Because in 1993, 94, 94, 95, wrestling wasn't well. You know?
Nope.
It's safe to say it wasn't at its best. It was kind of adolescence. It was stuck behind, its, you know, bits of Hulkamania, bits of this, bits of that. People were trying to recreate the old days. It was a bit gimmicky. It was a bit like everyone's got a second job. Oh, it's a plumber. So mainstream wrestling wasn't at its best. ECW was... And people were throwing things at the wall. So WCW partnered with AAA to have the When the World Collide pay-per-view. Because everyone wants to capture the Hispanic market. It's a huge market. It's a huge amount of money to make if you can tap into that. And it was a big thing. I think anyone with a tape trading thing had AAA When Worlds Collide.
It's up on YouTube in its entirety.
It's excellent. It's fantastic.
So it's got the one of the best matches of all time on it as well, because Conan's in the main event.
Oh yeah,
because the main event is not the best match.
It's not.
Hard to follow.
It was a cage match, wasn't it?
Gaio and Conan, who had just turned basically.
Yeah.
But so even without Conan's popularity in Mexico, even without his popularity when he went to WCW and was in the Wolf Pack and was over and gained big reactions, you know, Three Live Crew, everything else, LAX, you name it. Forget all of that. For me, his biggest impact was as an ambassador, playing a part of when, in 1995, when WCW went, right, well, we need to change things up. And they just went, right, we'll have Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, we'll have all these guys from ECW. Mm. And they left. And... I don't want to draw comparisons, but everyone, it's ruined it. That's a big company that's come in and ruined it. They've ruined it. They've taken those wrestlers. It's ruined now. So what do? Someone else came up and filled the void. And Paul Heyman said, we've made a deal with AAA. So in comes Psychosis, Conan, Rey Mysterio, Juventud Guerrera. And that's the first time that the Lucha style, in that regard, has had that kind of exposure in the US, which then influences the X division. It went so well that the WCW went, you know what, we'll have them as well. Thanks very much indeed. But without them, you wouldn't have had the huge cruiserweight explosion. You wouldn't have seen the influence of Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio might never have left Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's, even now, just watching him. He's incredible, isn't he?
He had a match with Randy Orton less than 24 hours ago that was really good.
Oh, it was tremendous. Yeah. And he had one of my favourite matches of this year was watching him and Zach Gibson.
Yeah.
Which is available on YouTube. I don't think the company will mind. But it's Conan was the guy who bridged that gap. He's sort of the English speaking translator. So he... And it was so much truth to it, they even made it an angle in TNA when they said, there's no X division, it's Lucha. Mm. You're calling it something else. But if you then look at all the people now who will say that Rey Mysterio was the one who inspired them, I can't remember off the top of my head, but loads of the guys in NXT UK, and you'll see influence of Lucha.
Even people like Penta and Phoenix and Bandido and Flamita, like they wouldn't be... doing what they're doing, not just in this country, but in the States, like just to such a like high level on an independent level. It's not just WWE or WCW that brought that. It's that thing of now, like, or even companies like The Crash, which are this blend of Lucha Libre and American independent wrestling. Like, you have to say that Conan's influence is still being felt today because of it.
Don't forget as well. Like he was when AAA and
So Triple A were only Triple A weren't a thing until the early 90s anyway, right? So
yeah, they were another company.
Because it was CMLL and they had UWF there.
Yeah. Mm.
And or UWA, sorry. UWA went by the wayside because that CMLL was is the company that's been going since the 30s.
Yeah.
Triple A was set up by one of CMLL's bookers in the early 90s.
That's it.
And Conan was one of the people who helped put the shows together. So he not only was involved in ring, he was involved out of the ring as well in terms of coming up with storylines and ideas and stuff like that. I know the LAX boys speak very highly of him because obviously they work with him currently in Impact. I keep going to call it TNA. It's not called that anymore, is it? It's called Impact now.
But even as a wrestler, though, the problem is with Conan is I don't think we saw Pete Conan in Wolfpack. But when
he was Hulk Hogan level popularity in Mexico. Like,
he's
with LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the worst, either the worst best comparison, the best worst comparison, in the sense he was very much like Grado.
Okay,
because he had that mainstream crossover. He was in a soap opera. He was on TV. He was a mainstream star. Obviously, different athlete to Grado, but he looked $1 million. He was incredible. But yeah, I think we kind of got the Andre the Giant run out of him
that
we've gotten at the tail end. But I think the greatest contribution Conan made is he answered a hugely important question: who throws a shoe?
Seriously.
Just to go back to my Super Dragon match choice, I was trying to remember desperately because he was in a lot of tag matches.
He was,
A lot of tag matches, often with different partners. And I was trying to remember a couple that I really enjoyed based on the DVDs I've got. One of them is PWG Fear, which is from 2011, which is Kevin Steen and Super Dragon over Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks. So this is like 7 years old now, but still a blinder. And also a good six man. This is a Kurt Russell reunion 3, which I'm certain I bought the DVD purely because it had the pun in the name.
Yeah.
And that's El Generico, Masato Yoshino, and Pac against Akira Tozawa, Kevin Steen, and Super Dragon. So if you would like an indie dream match, there you go. But loads of and a lot of his older stuff from when PWG wasn't the hot property that it is now. Yeah. It's super super stiff. He had a match at. During one of the bowler tournaments, one of the early ones against Necro Butcher, that was sick. Oof. So
literally,
oof is the word.
But then, even in that moment with the legacy thing, just the guys you name check that win the matches with him.
Yeah.
If PWG hadn't happened, then you know Kevin Steen wouldn't have necessarily had the exposure he did. The Young Bucks and all these guys. So yeah.
Your second choice, Matthew.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Ian. Talkative. Indie Dreams segue. My second pick is Mike Quackenbush.
Yes! What a man!
What a man, what a myth, what a legend.
Someone else has got 17 different versions of his finisher.
Do not get me started on people that come up with cradle pins and then call them cool things like the Shakara special, and then no one ever kicks out of it. And then when someone escapes it, they come up with the Shakara special too. It's the fucking greatest thing in the world.
Do you know what match I watched the other day, completely not knowing we were going to talk about this, was Eddie Kingston and Mike Quackenbush when they the first ever grand champion of Shakara,
oh,
wasn't
so
it?
Good.
Oh, what a match!
So the reason like I picked Quack again was, again, the whole legacy thing. So first and foremost, Mike Quackenbush is an unbelievably talented wrestler.
Yes.
He is phenomenal, and he's one of the best people to blend styles together, because in one match you will see some of the most phenomenal Lucha Libre moves with some of the most perfectly executed British wrestling like spots and situations. Matches with Claudio Castagnoli, Cesaro, like you say, Kingston, Hero, Danielson, you name it. Like, he's had absolutely...
Johnny Saint.
Yeah. Yeah. We booked him
Tiger
Trios. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Had a match with Johnny Kidd once, didn't he?
He did. It was one of Johnny Kidd's retirement matches, I believe.
So, here's a personal story about Mike Quackenbush. A few years ago, pre-Progress, I wanted to write a book where I travelled across America watching wrestling in different places.
Huh?
And I wanted to go to places where wrestling was big during the territorial days or whatever, and basically drive across America with my dad, who doesn't like wrestling, and go to WrestleMania, which was in mm-hmm. Phoenix that year. So it had only been maybe a year or two before we started Progress. And well up for doing it, and then various family things happened and we couldn't do it. But we'd bought tickets for WrestleMania and everything, and we'd made the plans. I emailed Mike Quackenbush. Now, bearing in mind, I had nothing to do with wrestling at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I emailed him and asked him if he'd be willing to be interviewed or something if I went to Philadelphia. Not only did he say he'd be interviewed, he invited me and my dad to stay at his house.
Yep.
He'd never met me. And then this year, I can tell you now because it didn't come off, but we tried to book him for our shows in... We tried to book him for our two shows in New Orleans, and he couldn't do either.
Mm-hmm.
And then we tried to book him for our shows, I think in New York. The two shows we tried to book him for were Philly and New York, and he couldn't do either because he had family commitments.
Because mm-hmm.
He's got a life outside of wrestling now. But so desperate to book him from such a nerdy point of view. And also when it got out to the talent that we were trying to book him, we then had a queue of people desperate to wrestle him if we got him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, pretty much everybody who works for wanted to wrestle him. So that tells you what sort of reputation he's got. And for some people, won't have a clue who he is. My wife thinks the name Mike Quackenbush is the funniest name in the world, to the point where, I may have told this on the podcast before, we're going to get a dog. The dog's going to be called Greg Excellent.
Brilliant.
Because I'm basically choosing CZW wrestlers to name the dog. So I was just reading out a list of wrestler names. And I said, Greg Excellent. She went, we should call a dog that. So we're going to get a dog called Greg Excellent. I think mm-hmm. that's acceptable.
Yep.
She has said if we get a second pet, it will be called Mike Quackenbush.
Amazing.
Because to her, she doesn't understand the full gravitas of what a legend he is, but thinks his name is the funniest name in the world.
It is.
And it's his real name.
I've got a Quackenbush story as well, actually. So he actually came and did a GPW show, bizarrely. It would have been 14 years ago, because I was 16.
You were gonna say I was six.
Yeah, yeah. You believe it. And he came over and did it, and he wrestled a guy called TJ Kane, who was at the time was one of the best wrestlers that we had, along with Joey Hayes and Damon Lee. TJ Kane then actually went on tour in Philadelphia with Shakara and actually wrestled in the ECW arena and did loads of cool stuff. He was also a character in Shakara. He was an original version of the character. But because I love Shakara, I will not tell you who he was the original character of. It's not hard to figure out. Just go on Cage Match. So Quackenbush came over, and I wasn't really deep into Shakara or Quackenbush at the time. But at the time, this ties nicely into the Tony Knox thing. Tony Knox actually got involved with wrestling through... He was doing an art project for an exhibition where... He was being a split between himself, the artist and photographer, and a character he created called Mothman, which was this masked wrestler that looked like a conquistador, like a gold outfit, but he was a moth. So on the show that Quackenbush was on for GPW, Mothman had a dark match, and it was literally just for Ross. So he had footage against someone called Adam Fate, who's no longer in wrestling. And to say it was a terrible match would probably be an understatement. And bless Tony, he was not a wrestler. I never wanted to be a wrestler and all of this. But it was lovely. It was a really nice thing to give back to Tony. So they had this match. And then one of the most beautiful moments in the world happened as Mike Quackenbush walked over and went, "Hi, I'm Mike. Nice to meet you, Baba." And he just spoke in this way to Tony that was so wonderful about, like, "I just love the colourfulness of your character and how outlandish it is, and I love this moth thing," and started coming up with all these, like, ideas about, like, being attracted to light, and, like just went into this like, monologue about how to, like, pad out his character. And I was like, as a 16-year-old kid, I was like, "Who is this guy?" But that's the reason why I'm inducting him, is the way he thinks about wrestling is so different to anyone else. And that's what makes him a treasure. If you ever listen to his podcast, the Kayfabe 2.0 stuff, it's such a fascinating listen, because it's not necessarily, there's no right and wrong in wrestling. Okay, there's no right in wrestling that can be wrong. But the thing with Quackenbush is that he always offers the alternative way of thinking. And I think his work with Shikara, which sometimes, and if I was being, like, hypercritical, their ideas are bigger than their actual production and their execution. But the love and passion and attention to detail that every single Shikara wrestler has, or every single Shikara wrestling show had, I think is such an important thing to independent wrestling, and how much they have influenced things like Sarah Del Rey wrestling men, or people like Heidi Lovelace, who's now Ruby Riott, being their grand champion, to people like Luke Harper doing the whole basically Bruiser Brody gimmick, and booking trios with Daniel Bryan and Dave Taylor and Jinsei Shinzaki, and then having characters who are a crab and all this incredible stuff, I think is such an important thing to independent wrestling. And we wouldn't have that if Mike Quackenbush didn't exist. So that's why he is my second pick.
Good shout. We will go into our final picks now. Pick number three for me. Should be a really obvious one. How on earth did we not put him in last time? But the greatest wrestler to have ever lived, Kenta Kobashi. Not in our own Hall of Fame. We do nothing but bang on about him.
Did we not? Yeah, it's true. Did we not put him in because we were like, we had quite a lot of...
Well, no, we put some people in, and then we had some nominations, and I can't understand why we didn't put him in.
Because there's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many worthy people, and it's not...
I just looked at the list of 20 people and went, why is he not in this? So, Kenta Kobashi, one of the finest ever in-ring performers, one of the most charismatic ever in-ring performers. The man who, we're banging on about it all the time, Burning Hammer, 7 times used, no one ever kicked out of it. We talked about various different versions of your finishes and stuff like that before. Has been in countless fantastic matches, not just in Japan, obviously had great matches, in particular with Samoa Joe and Ring of Honor. Just an absolute unbelievable legend. We've banged on about loads and loads and loads on this podcast, so there's not necessarily much I can add to this, apart from the fact that, because I was sitting there thinking, well, any of the four pillars could go in.
Yeah.
Because they're all retired.
So, like, the thing with the four pillars is, like, I always feel like we know who number four and number three is, and I mean no disrespect when I say that, but was Kobashi the best?
For me, yes. Like, I know that Misawa had arguably longer at the top of the game in Japan. But to me, yes, he's the best.
And I absolutely agree with you. Because I think in-ring and in terms of longevity, of quality, I think Kobashi gets the shout. Because even when I discovered Kobashi, it was when he was in Noah and he had the matches with, like, Akiyama and was still... The top guy.
And survived loads of bad shit. That's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, survived, like, kidney disease and stuff like that. And
also, this is the other thing. Retired at the right time and stayed retired.
Yes.
Which is a big thing for me. Is, like, he just...
he went, you know what? My time is up. It's time for other people to come through.
I genuinely thought you were going to start singing John Cena's theme
there. So, yeah, so that for me, he's such a no-brainer. But again, any of the four pillars could go in. And I fully expect at least Misawa, based on people's votes listening to this, to go in when people vote. But, yeah, for me, Kobashi's always got to go in. And I don't think anyone would argue about him going in unless they've just never seen any of his stuff.
No, I'm not. I've been notably quiet during this exchange because I'm not a huge Japanese wrestling fan. Mm. But you can't know wrestling and not know what he's about and know his impact and seeing other people wax lyrical. The match I'm only really familiar with is the one with Joe.
But even
that is enough to make me go, yes.
Mm. It was Kobashi that teamed with Kikuchi, wasn't it?
Yeah. Against the Can-Am Connection.
Watch.
That's on YouTube.
Watch Kobashi with Kikuchi, who's a junior heavyweight, but used to team with Kobashi against literally anyone. And, woof, there's some drama.
It's also in Kobashi's hometown, that match. It's also the first big match he's had after a long, long layoff for health reasons.
The double elbow surgery in the kidneys.
This was in 1992, so it was just his kidneys, I think.
All right.
He also has one of the lesser known qualities, and that is big lad, Japanese wrestler, lovely smile. Just light up the room level of, like, when he smiles, because as someone that has now witnessed Daisuke Sakamoto smile in real life, it is possibly one of the greatest things in the world ever. He is just a lovely man who is also a murderer, and it's great.
I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but when Cassius Ohno / Chris Hero who's still under 40, otherwise he'd be in this as well. when Chris was doing Super Strong Style this year, I was in the middle of writing my book, and I said, I've got all these lists, and he bless him, he pre-ordered it, so there's a copy of it at the Performance Centre, which is really, because he's built a library of books there for people who, especially when guys come in from outside of wrestling who don't necessarily know that much about it, it means they can go and read up about it and the history of it. And he was the guy who put me in touch with Aubrey Citizen, who's done the comic book history of wrestling, which is fantastic as well, absolutely brilliant. And I got chatting to him through Chris. But I was talking to Chris, and he said, I said, there's loads of lists in there. Like, there's a list of my top 10 favourite wrestlers of all time. And he went, who's number one? And I said, well, and Chris is in my top 10.
Yeah.
And I said, well, Kenta Kobashi's number one. And he went, oh, right, cool. You ever met him? And I went, no, I've met, I think all but, I've never met Shibata, but everyone else in my top 10 I've met. And he was like, oh, cool. I was like, he's a lovely guy. I'm like, I'm sure he is. He went, like, if you're ever in Japan, just tell me. I'll text him and I'll tell him to go for dinner with you. I'm like, what? And he went, yeah, he's lovely. He's like, he's not wrestling anymore. He's a businessman. He'll probably go for dinner with you. And I'm like, amazing. So at some point, I'm going to have to go to Ribeiro with Kenta Kobashi.
All I'm saying is, make it a table for free.
Oh, that's really sweet. Tell
me for the network.
Oh, no comment.
That's sweet of you. You know, are you going to pay for my ticket as well?
Nah. I was thinking more of just give Shibata a text.
I'd love to meet him. I'd love to meet Shibata.
All I'm saying is
already in the Hall of Fame as well now. Two Hall of Famers together.
All I'm saying is, if we all raise some money to send Jim to the New Japan Dojo in LA, number one, that'd be the funniest thing we've ever watched.
Be dead within a minute.
Watching a 40-something-year-old man
Just 40, mate. I'm just 40.
A 40-something-year-old man. It's his showbiz age.
I'm not Russell Kane. If I was Russell Kane, I'd be 28.
You haven't looked 28 for 28 years.
I don't look 40, though, to be fair.
No.
So,
If I look you straight in the eyes.
I was on the DLR the other day in London.
Why are you getting so mad? We can put you in our Hall of Fame.
Fuck you. I was on the DLR in London the other day, and there was a guy on he was really drunk, and he kept counting down to his birthday, and he kept going to his missus, I'm 45 in 23 minutes time. And I'm looking at him thinking, you look 20 years older than me. And the reason is, and I used to get this when I used to come pick my daughter up from school, I'd see people I was at school with and I'd look younger than them. Pardon me hair, I'd look younger than them. And the reason for that is I've not really done a decent day's work in many years. Yeah. So I've not had life beaten out of me as much. That's why.
You dress too young as well.
I do, but you know, I'm going to do that as long as it annoys people.
Insert picture of Steve Buscemi saying, "What's up, fellow kids?"
Who's your last choice, Christopher?
My last choice is Dave Finley.
Yeah! Finley! Love him.
He loves to fight.
I've heard a rumour.
I've heard whisperings.
Yeah. Another one of those. Why wasn't he in last year? Because.
Because I think it's because we put Regal in. I think we were a lot. I don't think the word's Coyer.
Coyer?
A lot like. I think we were trying to be too clever, is what I'm trying to get at.
No, none of us put Milano Collection 18.
Yeah, but it was during my rebellious phase of Tuesday Night Joe.
Why is it going to finish?
I think we only put like one or two each in last year, and then and we all had to agree them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took a lot of listeners' votes.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is, it's
that's why Viscera is.
It struck me, and only because it annoyed me. It struck me as we were starting out and it felt a little bit like we were catching up with everyone else on the night out. So we power drank and we threw down as many wrestlers as we could. And there's some obvious ones in there that aren't in the Hall of Fame. So your William Regals, your Christians, your Paul Heymans. Whereas now we kind of got all of them out of the way, whoosh, done. And then and the Dudleys, for example. Mm. And the Steiners. And now we are sort of one step away from that. Finley, just
yes, what a man.
Again, legacy. The number of people who say he's the best wrestler they've been in the ring with, the fact that he played a huge part in the women's wrestling evolution in the 2000s when he was so producing all the women's matches.
Where was I recently? I was on
the DLR.
No, I was backstage at a WWE show and Dave was producing and we got on pretty well with him. Like people who see, he tweets me every now and again, like he wants to do a progress show and stuff, which is really cool. But someone else, I think, was going out of their way to talk about how important he was to women's wrestling, and I was like, it's all stuff that we knew, but it's cool that everybody within WWE wanted to make a point of saying, this is down to him, you know. And he's so humble about all that sort of stuff because he's Fit Finley. He just wants to fight. I was talking to him and saying, like, do you miss wrestling? And he went, I'm not retired. I'm like, but you kind of are. And he went, no, I'll wrestle tomorrow if you want. And I'm like, okay. Which is where the joke in between us sort of started. And he, I'd kill to have him on a progress show if I could.
Is he third generation or is he second?
Second, his son's.
His son's third
generation. You're right, okay.
Yeah, David Jr. is third.
No, so he's.
And he's got two more kids as well who are only in their teens. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. And for me as well, so there's all that legacy and the fact that he's wrestled all over the world. And for me, he's someone. Because I found wrestling relatively late in life compared to a lot of people. Mm. I didn't become a fan until like 15, 16. But he's someone I remember watching on TV as a kid, as a child in the 1980s. And he was one of the few that absolutely stood out, coming down to the ring with Princess Paula.
Yeah.
To the point that when he turned up on Nitro, and not even that, just going to see him. The first independent wrestling show I went to was in Shepton Mallet.
Beautiful.
Just around the corner from the prison in Somerset, and it was the main event was an impromptu tag match, Johnny Smith and the Dynamite Kid versus Skull Murphy and Fit Finlay.
Oof.
And to see the guy that I saw on TV,
Back
and I was like, whoa, it blew my mind. And then when he, and seeing him at the Colson Hall in Bristol, having amazing matches with Robbie Brookside and Dave Taylor and Doc Dean and all these guys, just being outstanding. And then seeing him turn up on Nitro wrestling Randy fucking Savage.
Yeah.
It's a bit like having, you know, like when your uni friends and your home friends are in the same room.
Yeah.
Simpsons Futurama crossover. It was incredible. And just.
But I think that's what's incredible about him is that whether it was World of Sport, or All Star, or WCW, or that run he had in WWE
is
mental. Like, actually mental to think about. And then he did incredible stuff like he wrestled Sami Callihan at Evolve. Was it the first ever Evolve show? It was one of the first ones. Yeah. He's done so much in his career. And, like, I kind of get what he's saying about, oh, I'm not retired. Because if he literally popped up tomorrow and they were like, so we're recording this on the day that Vince McMahon's coming back to Raw. Vince McMahon walks out tonight and goes, oh, yeah, by the way, Finlay's back. We'd all go, sweet, all right, I'm strapping in.
I got someone here who loves to fight.
And money. And we'd all be so on board for it. And then Jack Gallagher can become his new Hornswoggle.
He's not tall enough.
It's... Yeah, he's just.
You
the
are
best.
In so much trouble next time he comes back to England. He will hunt you down.
I've just done a Smallman. I've made myself laugh. Like,
I make myself laugh all the time. Just the joy of living.
Sometimes I think about someone and I'm smiling all the way through.
Yeah, I've heard that rumor.
You will always be surrounded by true friends,
especially the ones trying to take you down.
Wrap things up, Matthew. Who's your third choice?
It is, of course. The one, the
it's
only.
It's going to be someone who's not wrestled since 1927.
He's had four matches in Venezuela.
Bruce the Barber. No, it's not. It is. You'll like this. Don't worry about
okay.
it.
Okay.
It is Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah, again, someone I looked at and went, how's he not in?
Yeah. In the words of our friend Craig, one half behind Tetsujin, the lady killer. Minoru Suzuki.
Everyone look at the gif of him in 1992.
The handsome rogue.
He's still handsome now.
Honestly, one of the funniest things is getting Craig going, you could take him home to your mum and she would love him. He just genuinely is brilliant. But again, being an innovator. Well documented. Him and Funaki are the guys behind Pancrase, which started the real kind of influx or the start of having these hybrid wrestling companies like Rings and Shooto and stuff like that, even though Pancrase was an actual MMA company and still is, it still exists. It's owned by Sufa now, but it's still a company. And him being like, not like a lot of wrestlers, he was actually a bloody good mixed martial artist as well. Having all that catch background as well and all of that wrestling influence, because that's what Pancrase was. It wasn't just MMA fighters, it was catch wrestlers that learned how to wrestle and then learn how to fight.
Well, stress, Pancrase is not what Tony Knox has had removed.
Yes.
That was a kidney.
It was.
It's a terrible joke.
But if we raise $3,000, we'll have that out as well.
Brilliant. What from... The company.
What we'll do is we'll actually, instead of a main event, can we do this at unboxing? Can we just have Tony Knox laid in the ring and play Operation with him?
I mean, I can't tell you if we can do that or not because then it would ruin unboxing. But, you know, I think
you can't rule it out.
I mean,
can we get the rumble buzzer if we only hit the sides?
The point that you're making, though, about him being around almost the genesis of mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Is, and then to go on, you look at all the people who are around that sort of, that time. So if you pick someone like Ken Shamrock, who I think is a similar age to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ken Shamrock's back wrestling at the minute, I believe. But Ken Shamrock was never... He was a decent wrestler, but he was never the wrestler that Suzuki has been. Suzuki's always been really, 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 really good. And was always good at the professional wrestling stuff, was always good at the mixed martial arts stuff. And to still... And not only... If you think about it from this point of view, if a wrestler's 50 years old, he's 50, right? So if a wrestler's 50 years old in any other company in the world and he's still wrestling, people have got their experience, but they're the older guy.
Yeah.
And to have the level... So even like when Ric Flair was 50.
Yeah, yeah.
Ric Flair was still dangerous because he was the dirtiest player in the game and it was Ric Flair. But he did not have the aura around him that Minoru Suzuki at 50 has.
Yeah.
It's like, you know when you're a kid and your mum says, you wait till your dad comes home.
Yeah.
And the fear you had.
Yeah.
That is how everybody looks at Suzuki.
So he's basically the human equivalent of one.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Two.
Yeah.
The older he gets, the more dangerous he is. No one's looking at him going, he's 50 now, I can take him.
This is why I always say he's a Tekken final boss, because he's Hayachi.
Yeah.
Because he's gone from Tekken 1 to Tekken 8, and you still go, oh, bloody hell, he might turn into the devil at any point and kick me off a cliff. That is how much he is terrifying. And he's just got... And it's a really good point you made of he's great at both things in MMA and pro wrestling. Like, so many people always dismiss him as like, oh, well, he's the ultra-stiff guy that kills everyone and stuff like that. No, he's not. He knows what pro wrestling is. And even when he was doing the towel off the head thing in Pancrase, he knew what he was doing. It's now even more terrifying because he's got that haircut and that face. But he's just an incredible human being. He's been GHC heavyweight champion. He's been Triple Crown champion. He's never won the IWGP heavyweight championship.
He's been never open weight though, hasn't he?
He has, and he's been intercontinental as well. But and he was intercontinental champion in his late 40s. Like, to have that longevity and have such an impact on so many different aspects of it.
So there's a question for you. As I say, I'm not a massive Japanese wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. It would be unlikely for him to be the guy that beats Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise you that much if he did.
Not at all.
No. I mean,
and that's the thing, is to be credible to go and lift the top championship in a company.
I mean, the thing I'd be worried about if I ran New Japan is that if Suzuki decided he wanted to be IWGP heavyweight champion, who's going to stop him? Apart from a shotgun and bad intentions.
Well, I believe Jim
Not the tag team, by the way.
Believe Jim is going to Japan at some point. Maybe you can sit him down, have a word with him. I believe
you and Ken Kobashi.
Table for three. Books.
Hi, Evanaro. Do us a favour. Can you just calm it down?
I met Suzuki in New Orleans because he did Bloodsport, which was next to our venue. And I very briefly met him and said hello to him. He seemed lovely.
Another Japanese legend who has a very warm, rooming smile.
Hmm.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it also looks like he's just murdered your family. So.
Is this why Misawa never really smiled? Because his was so potent. It would just lay the room to
Misawa, the stories that Chris Hero was telling me about Misawa is like, so when he was wrestling for Noah and they were both still wrestling, like, so Kobashi would, like, he'd wrestle his match and then he'd sit on an exercise bike for the whole show. Like, I don't mean sit on an exercise bike like most people's clothes sit on their exercise bike. I mean actually pedaling, like he's in a fucking spin class. Like, he was that obsessed with staying fit all the time.
Wow.
Misawa would smoke. That was the difference between the two. Misawa would be like, oh, just lean on a wall, just smoking.
Are you saying he's basically Krusty the Clown of Puro Wrestling? Is that it?
No, that was El Samurai. He's also very famous for just having absolutely no physical attributes for being a really good wrestler, wasn't it?
If you look at go back and look at Misawa in terms of the shape of his body, like. So if you go and play like Giant Gram, the Dreamcast game, or you go and play the Japanese version, Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, which is the Japanese version of No Mercy on the N64. And Misawa was in those games, and he's really boxy, and you look at him and go, this must just be old graphics. No, he was square. He was a square human being. And he didn't look like an athlete, and that's because he wasn't an athlete. He was an athlete. He was that thing of like being wrestling fit. So I know that a lot of the first time my wife watched Chris Hero wrestle, she was like, because he's not fat, but he's a big dude.
Yeah.
And she's watching him doing nip ups and just running constantly, and she's like, how fit is he? And I'm like, well, you don't have to look like Conor McGregor to have cardio. Like, you know, some people just go and go and go. And Misawa was one of those people who just go and go and go and go and go, despite smoking 60 cigarettes a day and legendary drinking a lot of booze. Like, it's just the way it was.
Also, Misawa dressed up as a green Santa Claus in at one point in Noah, which is great because it's that time of year where that gift's coming back. But if anyone was going to be the Grinch, it would definitely be Minoru Suzuki.
Yes.
As he slaps your child in the face.
Wow.
He is available.
So they are our nine additional people going in to the Hall of Fame. So from Matt Richards, it's Megumi Kudo and Minoru Suzuki and who's the third one?
Mike
Quackenbush. From Christopher Brooker, we had Shane Helms, Dave Fit Finley, and who was your third?
Conan.
And from me, I had Kenta Kobashi, and now I can't remember my own choices because I'm tired. I had
Mabel. Big Daddy V.
Don't start this again. I had Kenta Kobashi, I had Super Dragon, and I had Doug Williams. So they were there. The initial nine went out to 29 people in the Tuesday Night Jaw Hall of Fame. We're going to put another five in. You need to vote for them as well as voting for your stuff for the end of year awards. So again, you email progresspolls@gmail.com. Progresspolls, P-O-L-L-S, @gmail.com. Don't forget to give me one person to go in the Hall of Fame. They have to either be retired or over the age of 40, and they cannot currently be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Okay, that's the rules for that. Over the age of 40 or retired, cannot be in the current WWE Hall of Fame. Just one name for that. And then one name in each of the following categories in your email to progresspolls@gmail.com. I would like your male wrestler of the year from WWE, your male wrestler of the year not from WWE. I would also like your female wrestler of the year from WWE, your female wrestler of the year non-WWE. And again, in both WWE and non-WWE categories, we would like match of the year. So WWE match of the year, non-WWE match of the year, can be from anywhere in the world. And then your show of the year, both from WWE standpoint and from a non-WWE standpoint. Just so you're aware, because I had to clear this up last year, NXT is definitely WWE, okay? So that counts. Anything within the WWE brand counts as a WWE show. Anything from outside of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Mae Young Classic, etc. Anything from outside of that is non-WWE. So be it Progress, Fight Club Pro, Attack, New Japan, Future Shock,
thank
wherever.
You.
So, yes. And we'll do them in the beginning of January, so because there's still some shows left. Obviously, Future Shock have got a show towards the end of end of December. We've got a show unboxing on the 30th. Mm-hmm. So don't, you know, if you're not sure about your awards just yet, maybe hold off. Just be thinking about them and then send them in first week of January. I reckon that's probably a good time to get them in. So progresspolls@gmail.com with all that stuff. Thank you, Christopher. Where are you on Twitter, Christopher?
I'm at the Brooker Man.
Excellent. Matthew, thank you. Where are you on Twitter?
At M Richards Host.
Excellent. I'm at Jim Smallman. If you're going to tweet me about wrestling news, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw, and all the usual stuff, progresswrestling.com, demand-progress.com, jimsmallman.com. This podcast is part of the Distraction Pieces Network. It's awesome and we love it all. Thank you, Pip, for giving us a platform. We appreciate it. This will be the last one before Christmas. So if you're celebrating Christmas, have a lovely one and just have a very nice time of year. Good work. You will always be surrounded by true friends. Bye!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.